We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to Roto Grinders today. I'm Jordan Cooper, aka Blender Ed, Blender HD. If you want to follow me on Twitter. And it's Friday, April 12th. We'll be taking a look at tomorrow's UFC 300 slate on DraftKings. They got big contests, $200,000 to first. We got a 13 fight card, one of the best in UFC history. Hit that thumbs up button on your way in the door. Hit the subscribe button if you're new here. Hit the notification bell to know when we go live. Remember, later today, we'll have Grinders Live. We'll have Crunch Time for MLB. So if you're down with, you know, baseball, MLB DFS, props, pick 'em, everything, go check that out later today. But join with me on the eve of UFC 300. It's John Breslin, a.k.a. Squirrel Patrol, the master of the takedowns, the premium content that should be coming out later today, as well as the Ground and Pound podcast. Here for just for UFC 300, our Freebie Friday. The Ground and Pound podcast is free for everyone. So it's not even behind the premium content. You don't have to sign up. Feel free to listen to Liam and Mike break down the fights. Go check that out after the show. But we got everything for you. Projections, ownership, expert survey, Squirrel Patrol's takedowns, Liam's fight breakdowns, everything. Premium content. Click on that link in the description. Join us today. John, are you excited for UFC 300?
Yeah, absolutely. Merry UFC 300 Eve. It is the eve of the big pay-per-view event. Probably, you know, one of the bigger ones, if not the biggest one of the year. Got 3 5-round fights. So that's a differentiator on the card. Got Bo Nickel on the card. He's one of the biggest, you know, UFC up-and-coming stars. So it should be a good fight card up and down. We've been saying for a few weeks now that, you know, the fight night, well, it's not the highest quality and not the highest level UFC event, because if the fighter was that high level, they would have been saved for UFC 300. Now it's here, and it should be a great card and big prize pools.
Right. We got a couple of fights that are they're fairly hefty favorites. We have a bunch of fights in the mid-range that are much closer. Obviously, compared to a Fight Night card, more known names, more experience, right? It's a little bit, maybe a little bit less variance in general, because we're not dealing with half the card of people with less than four fights in the UFC. But we do have a dynamic we don't see that often. 3 5-round fights, and I'm talking for DFS purposes. 3 5-round fights. We got Zhang Weili, 9,200. Yan Jinan, 7,000. We got Alex Pereira, 8,300. Jamal Hill, 7,900. We also got the BMF 5-rounder, which is, you know, the unsanctioned kind of title. Gagey at 8,800. Max Holloway at 7,400. Now, from a DFS perspective, obviously, the 5-round fights, you know, if every fight ended in a decision, you know, having those 2 extra rounds of scoring definitely helps. But if you're going to start playing, natural inclination, like if you're playing cash games, you're probably playing 3 5-round fighters, if not 4, and stacking one of them. But for large field GPPs, once you say, okay, I'm going to take Whaley, Gagey, and Pereira, your combinations of the other 3 fighters gets quite limited, where those lineups could easily be duplicated 50, 100 times. And even if you try to make combinations with the underdogs, you know, you're taking Whaley, but you're taking Hill. You're taking Max Holloway. You do, like, if you roster 3 5-round fighters, it makes it much harder to differentiate yourself. But the thing is that if you take 0 5-round fights, you definitely will be much more unique. I'm not sure if what the chances of the optimal lineup not containing any 5-round fighter. So from your perspective, John, what are you doing most off? Like, what if you were to rank these, and you could talk about your thought process behind rostering 3 5-round fighters, 2 5-round fighters, 1 5-round fighter, 0 5-round fighter, or stacking one of the fights in some combination like that?
Yeah. So there's a lot to sort through this card, and there's a lot to consider from a DFS angle. And you have to make some choices, obviously. And like, one of those choices is actually like, how talky do you want to go for? Like, how badly do you want to avoid duplication? How badly do you want to reduce duplication? Like, because it's a big prize pool, 200,000 the first. Like, I don't know, if I split it 4 ways, do I care? You know, am I like upset that 3 other people, you know, had the same lineup? But yeah, if I'm duplicated 60 times, I start to care. So yeah, there's a lot to sort through. I think in terms of like how many fighters from the 5-round fights do I want to use? I don't know that there's a clear answer. I mean, I do think that this is a card where I'll strongly consider, I do this about once a year, strongly consider stacking a fight in GPPs, particularly the Max Holloway, Justin Gaethje fight. I think that's one where they're going to go out and they're just going to like wail on each other for 5 rounds. And the Weili Zhang Jinan fight, that's another one that I think believe is favored to go over 3 rounds. Probably, I think, favored to go the distance. Weili Zhang is a pretty high paced fighter. Put up some massive scores. Yan Jinan, not so high paced, but she's only 7,000. Max Holloway and Jinan at 7,000 or 7,400 and 7,000 respectively are going to be hard for me to get away from. Like, I think I'm going to want to be over the field. I think Max Holloway is going to be high owned. I don't think Jinan is going to be that high owned. I might want to be over the field on both of them. I think Max Holloway, one of my favorite fighters in the UFC, just in terms of like a UFC fighter, you know, a take, but also from a DFS scoring take. He's the striking equivalent of Merab, where Merab just gets the chain takedowns and like just racks up massive scores with his takedowns. Max Holloway with the striking, just some kind of absurd scores in his UFC game log. So I will probably have some GPP lineups that have, Max Holloway and Justin Gaethje, both of them, in the fight, in the same lineup. I'll probably have a couple handful of lineups out of like 150 that have Weili Zhang and Jan Zanon in them as well. And I'll be over the field on both of those underdogs in tournaments.
The key parts about Holloway and Zanon is that they're cheap enough where even like an 80-point decision loss can still get them in the optimal lineup. Especially on a card where we got minus 1600, minus 440, minus 510, minus 300, minus 230. We got minus 225. We got guys in this maybe 87 and up, 100 and up range. And also, truthfully, we got guys that could finish underneath that if this is a slate where no one under 7,700, no one under 7,800 wins, like, it's impossible to make a lineup without someone that has lost. And the likelihood of the highest scoring losing fighter not being in the five round fights is quite low, right, in general. And that's kind of the way that the stack would win. But like, basically, once if another underdog puts up 100 points, I mean, You're pretty much dead for that type of strategy. But I'm not a big stacker because I think the Gagey Holloway stack is going to be overowned, right? I mean, it's not like it's going to be absurdly owned, but yeah. The Janan one maybe not as much. But you really have to rely on the fact that like no underdog wins, because even in a decision loss, Janan probably still only puts up maybe 50. The problem I found with if we differentiate the three round fights, there are three different styles of fights. Okay. Gagey Holloway, that's most probably just because these guys don't get knocked out. Like Holloway's never been knocked out. I think Gagey wins the fight, but it's basically no grappling. So you go, okay, where's the upside? No grappling. It's like, now these guys throw like eight significant strikes like a minute. Like, yeah. Like these guys could easily put up 200 significant strikes each in this fight. So the volume is there for that. So that's that style of fight. Then you have the Weili Zhang fight, and Zhang is mostly a striker, right? And Weili is everything. So like she goes for takedown, she goes for a lot of things. And if Weili's going to be taking down Janan, because Janan isn't a good wrestler, isn't a good grappler, isn't good on the mat, that just zaps like the points that Yan Janan could like get. You can't really score points from the bottom. So Weili has the highest ceiling on the entire slate. I think she'll be one of the most popular, if not the highest owned fighter on the whole slate at 9,200. Because in a five-round decision, she could score 160 points. I mean, like, she could score a lot. And then we got the Pereira-Hill fight, which is in the mid-range. If this fight was a bigger spread, it would be a little bit different. Basically, two kickboxers. I view this fight as, if it goes five rounds, could one of them sneak into the optimal? Maybe if there aren't as many finishes as we expect on this slate. But for the most part, this is you're picking the guy and to knock the other guy out, right? Like, you're going to need at this price, you're going to need a round two at minimum, right? If not a round one knockout. So like, this is the fight I'm least likely to stack, and also the fight that I'm most likely to fade, because there's really only one path for these guys to score 100 points, because there's not going to be enough striking volume. That a 48-47 decision after five rounds, whoever wins is going to score like 85 points, and that's going to be about it.
Yeah. So the last fight of the night, like the between Pereira and Hill, is probably the one. Like I'm not like down on the fight. I think it's just kind of just another fight on the card. Like, it's not like I'm going to, you can't own either of these fighters. You obviously can. And I think you should give them a little bit of a boost for the chances it goes beyond three rounds. And, Jamal Hill can be a little bit higher volume. He had a pretty good score in his last fight, which I think went five rounds, gets split over to Teixeira. But like compared to the other two fights, like the other two 5-round fights, it's the least appealing, the least likely to go the distance. Like talking about this card, and I think I put this in the expert survey that and just about Max Holloway. Another thing I put in the expert survey, Max Holloway's averaged 58 points in his last four losses, which is an excellent score for a loss. And we were coming off a card where Chris Curtis scored in the 60s in a loss, and Alex Morono scored in the 40s in a win. This card reminds me a lot of, I think, UFC 295, the card last year where we had multiple 5-round fights, and Bo Nickel was on the card, and nobody under 8,000 lost, or nobody under 8,000 won, except right. for Alexi Grasso in, I think, the second to last fight of the night. But H3 Buddha, Mike Brown, was talking all week about how he thought like Alexi Grasso could potentially get on the winning line if in a loss. And she actually won the fight. And so he won the GPP. I think he split like 100. He split 150,000, but it was over.
That was his biggest win ever in DFS. Yes.
Yeah. And, because he was over the field on Alexi Grasso, thinking that she could get there in a loss, and then she won the fight. But this could be a similar card where we don't see a bunch of people, priced under 8,100. So we have an 8,100 fight on the card as well. But if we don't see anybody below that 8,100 mark win, or we, or only one of those fighters wins, right? That's going to be an absolute requirement to have that fighter. And if you don't see a bunch of, if you maybe see like one fighter, one underdog wins, but it's a very low scoring win, you could easily see like Max Holloway or Jan Chanon get there in a loss.
The other dynamic on the slate, we got Bo Nickel, 9,500. To put things into perspective, he's minus 1,600 to win. He's currently minus 1,300 to win inside the distance. That's a 93% inside the distance probability. Minus 285 in the first round. Like, the likelihood of him scoring 100 points, like, the probability of 100 plus points out of Bo Nickel is by far the highest on the entire card. But the probability of him scoring like 130 points starts to go down, because Bo Nickel will typically win via a takedown and a choke, right? He's facing Cody Brundage. This is obvious. I mean, it's essentially, we're going to start the main card of the pay-per-view with a mauling and then move on. I'm assuming when our sims come out for premium members, that Bo Nickel's optimal rate is going to be significantly lower than his ownership, just because at 9,500, like Whaley is there at 9,200. Figueredo is 9,100. And I mean, yeah, he's less of a favorite, obviously. But if he wins, he could outscore Bo Nickel. Jalen Turner could outscore Bo Nickel. Justin Gaethje in a 5-round decision win could outscore Bo Nickel. Sarukian in a first round finish could outscore Diego Lopez in a first round finish. Like Bo Nickel, it's one of those types of things where Bo Nickel could easily come out and score 105 points. And like, you're just sitting there going, well, I'm great, I got 105 points. And then the winning lineup still doesn't contain, like, you did great in your line. Like, you look at your DraftKings screen, you go, I made money today. But it's like, well, you didn't get any of the lineups in like the top 100, but you got most of your lineups for cash because of it. So like, I don't know about you, but I view Bo Nickel as a small field GPP play more than a large field one, just simply due to the fact that I'm not sure how he scores like more than 100. Without the quick win bonus, it's hard for me to see him scoring more than 110 points.
Yeah. You just went through my entire thought process on this card, like point by point. So looking at the card last year, the one that I was talking about, I think UFC 295, Bo Nickel got the first round finish, scored over 100 points, was not on the winning lineup. He was 9,600 on that card. He's 9,500 on this card. And it's one of the dynamics we see all the time in UFC. Bo Nickel has by far the highest chance of getting like a first round win. I think it's over two-thirds chance. It's better than minus 200. I've got the implied odds at about like 68%. With the implied probability at about 68%. But he's probably not going to be the only, if he gets that, you know, first round finish, he's probably not going to be the only one that gets the first round finish. So, like, how do the other cheaper, and he's the most expensive fighter on the card. So how do the other guys that are getting first round finishes, or ladies that get first round finishes, like, how do they score compared to Bo Nickel? And that's a toss up. I can't wait to see the sim results of what they say, because he has such strong first round finish odds, but he's the most expensive fighter on the card, on a card that has 3 5 round fights, and not a lot of like viable underdogs. More viable underdogs in this card that I've been talking about last year, but still, you know, it's not like we've got a mispriced fighter or anything. We can just reach down and grab some win equity. I don't know. I put on the expert survey, there's a thing like the fight you're most likely to avoid. And I actually put the Bo Nickel Cody Brundage fight as the one I'm most likely to avoid. I'm terrified of that answer because I know, and I said, like, you can't fade Bo Nickel completely. And I agree, in like smaller field, like if you're playing the 555, then you can like have some more Bo Nickel in your lineup, right? Because it's maybe a little more perceived safety, and there's still like some tremendous upside with 68% chance of getting a first round win.
In the 555, you don't need the optimal. You just need the winning. You just need the highest score. In the large field contest, you're almost going to need the optimal. Here's the scary question, because I know you're massively multi-enter, 150 lineups, right? I'll try this, I'll try that. How much Cody Brundage are you going to have?
Not a lot.
the fact that it's more than zero should highlight that you never know. He could run into something.
You never know. And I've heard on a couple of different, you know, a couple of the different podcasts and stuff that I listen to, one of which is Liam's. He has like, he comes out with multiple stuff every week, like multiple videos every week that are excellent. And like, I think he's mentioned it. I've heard it mentioned elsewhere that it's maybe in Bo Nickel's best interest to like extend this fight a little bit. Like, he doesn't have a lot of fight time in the UFC. I think this is his third fight. It's like biggest step up in competition, but it's not a huge step up. with Cody Brundage. Brundage, like, fairly fortuitous outcomes in his last two fights. One was against Zach Reese, which, you know, was a clear win. But win in a way that, you know, he slammed him down when Reese, I think, was going for an armbar or something and got the knockout. You just don't see that often. And his fight before that was the one I always bring up about Jacob Malkoon, where like anything can happen. Brundage was just getting dominated, and Malkoon had him pinned down and couldn't stop hitting him in the back of the head. and the ref called it a medical disqualification because Brundage said he couldn't continue because he was like too concussed or something. That counts as a first round win for Brundage. Brundage, even at 6,700, like, his win odds aren't that great because he's only got like less than a 10% chance to win. Like, we've seen fighters the last couple of cards at 6,700, I think, priced below 7,000, have a greater than 35% chance of winning their fights. Brundage hasn't, like, I've got it at 8.5%, implied odds to, or implied probability to win his fight. I'm probably not going to own him, roster him at that, even at an 8% mark. It'll probably be below that. Not a lot of Cody Brundage.
Let's go through some of the other fights on the card. I mean, for UFC 300, you know, we'll take a little bit more time and get your thoughts on, especially from a DFS strategy perspective, not necessarily a fight breakdown perspective. We got Kayla Harrison making her UFC debut. I mean, right? It's not her. It's not obviously not her her MMA debut, just in this promotion. Kayla Harrison versus Holly Holm, who's 42 years old now. Kayla Harrison's a minus 440 favorite. She's plus 120 to win inside the distance. She's 9,300. She's like the odd person out at like the high price range at 9,300. And you know what I always say, I've made most of my money, you know, taking the high price female fighters that people don't want to click on. Our Sims probably are going to have her quite low based on the metrics, but I'm will I'm will I mean, it's not like I'm going to have much of her. I'm playing 125 lineups, so like I'm doing a lot more than I normally would. I like targeting fights where there's some amount of uncertainty. And to me, the uncertainty isn't on the Kayla Harrison side. It's on the Holly Holm side that Kayla Harrison could look like a minus 2,000 favorite in this fight. And if Kayla Harrison has her game plan and grapples, who says that she can't score 140 points in a it has to be a mauling, but I don't know about Holly. It's not like I trust Holly Holm to put up as much of a fight. Although Holly Holm is this fight at this weight class. I mean, I'm not saying that Kayla Harrison's even going to have success even taking Holly Holm down, but if she does and Holly Holm doesn't really belong in there, I'm looking for these situations where people look at this and go, I'm avoiding this fight. It probably goes to the decision. And I'm going, well, what happens if Holly Holm is completely washed and Kayla Harrison just destroys her? Like, I'm looking for those spots.
Yeah. So, and actually tying it in, something I forgot to mention about the Bo Nickel thing. If I'm using Bo Nickel in a lineup, right, I want to keep the ownership for that lineup down. I definitely will be using Bo Nickel, but I don't want to have like the same Bo Nickel lineup that everybody else is going to have. Right? I do think he's going to be overowned, like the most expensive fighter. He's the guy that everybody's going to be like playing Max Holloway to get. So if I'm using Bo Nickel, I want to have a lower owned fighter. And I think like we've got, in terms of ownership, we have the two lowest owned fighters being the two Cody's, Brundage and Garbrandt. And then the next two lowest owned fighters we've got projected as being the two fighters from this fight, Holly Holm and Kayla Harrison. And that's too low. Like, there's too many unknowns here. So I would pair Bo Nickel with like either of these fighters, you know, pair him with Kayla Harrison and try to make it work. Right. Then you're clearly playing a bunch of underdogs. But pair Bo Nickel with Holly Holm. And then you're maybe eliminating, you know, 80-90% of the other Bo Nickel lineups, because if Holly Holm's only going to be like 10-11% owned. We don't really know what's going to happen with this fight. This would be one that we want to see the weigh-ins. On the crunch time last week, Mike Brown was saying he's not sure Kayla Harrison's going to make weight. We'll see. And this is one where you can kind of drive yourself in circles thinking about what does the UFC want, right? Do they want Holly Holm to win and prove that the PFL is nothing compared to the UFC? Or do they want maybe Kayla Harrison to win, right? And then they prove like, well, we've got the best fighter, from the PFLs now in the UFC and she's legit. Then they're kind of building her up. So I don't know. I've kind of thought through both of those angles and I don't think there's anything you can really parse out there. But I think, it's a fight that's going to be low owned, and I don't know that it necessarily should be, but I also want to see the weigh-ins and make sure the fight's, taking place to begin with. I do think hopefully UFC 300, there's probably going to be less weight misses. It's a little bit less of a concern that those should be starting in about half an hour here or 35 minutes. I probably just jinxed it by saying we maybe have to worry less about weight misses, but generally more professional fighters, you're going to see less weight misses.
Well, you mentioned Cody Garbrandt. The next fight is the Deverson Figueiredo, 9,100. Cody Garbrandt, 7,200 or 7,100. Do I have the wrong price? I think I have the wrong price. It's on the wrong price on my sheet. Cody Garbrandt. I know Cody Garbrandt is a name, but I don't know. He's not the same fighter that he once was. Deverson Figueiredo, minus 300 to win, minus 120 inside the distance, plus 215 in the first round. I don't see him being, I mean, he's not going to be unowned, but he's going to be higher owned than Harrison, but he'll probably be lower owned than Gaethje and Sarukian up here. Obviously, more people will be playing Zhang Weili. It sounds like you're more inclined to take shots on underdogs and play the chalkier favorites than the vice versa. And I feel like I'm on the other side. I feel like I'm the one that's like, I want to be over the field in Harrison. I want to be over the field in Figueredo, because they're favored enough that, and they have good inside the distance lines, that these are the people that will outscore Bo Nickel. These are the people that could outscore Zhang Weili. And I'm not confident. I'm really not confident on this card that any of the underdog, like anyone under 7,700 wins. And in those kind of, when I feel that way, it just feels like I'm going to get more different by, it's not saying I'm going to play a Harrison Figueredo combination, but I'll probably be more than this. But it feels like to me that you're willing to take a shot on Cody Garbrandt. I'm not sure how he wins this fight. I'm not sure how he scores if he wins this fight outside of a random knockout.
I might end up being a little bit under the field in this fight, but Figueredo has a pretty strong like first round win odds. I think it's over 30%, and I think it's like one of the top like inside the distance first round finish probabilities on the slate. But he might not score well if he doesn't get that first round finish. Garbrandt, I think, is going to be pretty low. Like I said, I think we've got the two Codys as the lowest owned fighters on the card. I think we've got him at about 10% ownership. I think that's about right. I agree. He probably doesn't win this fight. He's got about a 28% chance by the odds. So maybe I'll probably be over the field on that 10%. Probably not dramatically over the field, though. But yeah, if I'm rostering him at like a 15-18% clip, that's a 50%-80% increase off of the 10% ownership. So I'm not like in love with this fight. I just think that it's going to be probably fairly low owned. You have to make decisions somewhere, and I think people are going to go elsewhere. It wouldn't see me if both of these fighters come in a little below what we have in their projected ownership at. I don't know. this is a tough one. I don't have strong feelings about it. I'm probably just going to do like what ownership rate I think is right based off of the odds. And I might come in over or under the field depending on where the actual ownership comes in.
Well, the next two fights I think are carbon copies stylistically of each other. And this is Jalen Turner versus Renato Moicano and Armin Tsarukyan versus Charles Oliveira. Obviously the probability obviously with Turner and Tsarukyan as the favorites are they get their knockouts, right? I mean, like this is it's basically, but you know, power punchers versus submission specialists. I mean, I don't want to call like Oliveira and Moicano to be just like submission only people, but for the most part, they're going to score 100 plus points getting their first round submission, but probably don't score well in long periods. Like even in decisions, they're more likely to go for submissions than ground and pound and stuff like that. So like, that's why the projections for Oliveira Moicano are going to always appear lower, but their ceilings are 100 points. I mean, their ceilings are 100 points because when they win, they're winning because they took someone's back in the first round. I mean, like, even in the second, even in a well-timed second round submission win, they're 7,300, 7,500. The question is that when they don't win, they don't typically, like, when they lose the fights, they score 18 points. I mean, they're not scoring very much. And same for decisions. But the problem that I have with Turner and Tsarukyan is that they probably don't score very well in decisions either. So it's like, these are like fights where like you hope that no matter which side you have, you need it to not go the distance. I think Jalen Turner is going to be maybe over-owned. It's hard for me to gauge what the ownership is because I think outside of Holloway, people are going to be struggling to find a cheap underdog to use. And I just get the sense that, you know, that Moicano and Oliveira's win conditions are 100 points, that more people will take a shot in it because we have their ownership quite low. And I just don't think they're going to be like 11, 12% owned. I think they'll end up being more like 18 to 20% owned because it's either you take these guys or you take Garbrandt, Janon, Holm, Brundy. Like, I don't know. If people want to jam in Nickel, Whaley, and Gagey or something, you have to take someone down here that's not Max Holloway. I don't know. I'm assuming if our Sims are going game by fight based Sims, I have to think that Oliveira and Moicano are optimal way more over 11, 12% of the time, just simply due to their distribution is so like binomial in a way where it's just like when they win, they're going to be optimal. And when they don't, they're not. And that's the way it is.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, I kind of lumped Jim Miller in a little bit just in this price range. I think they're all three of them are viable underdogs. It kind of tails off after them. Garbrandt has like significantly lower win probability than Moicano, Oliveira, and Miller. So like I do think it like kind of drops off after 7,300. They all have about the same win probability, like the same like inside the distance probability, like first round finish probability. And I'll probably try to be over the field on all of them. I'd be surprised if Charles Oliveira really comes in at 11% ownership. I think it'll be higher than that. Just because he's a fairly big name fighter and he's priced down there at 7,500. But it's interesting, like Moicano, I like Moicano like kind of significantly less than Charles Oliveira. But they've got about the same win probability. I think like 34% versus like 33%, and Moicano's just a little bit under him for first round finish odds. I think you can make an argument for all three of these guys. I think I probably want to be over the field on all of them in terms of like my 150 set. Like I think they're all going to be under owned, especially if they come in actually at the ownership we've got at like 11, 12%. I'm guessing that they're going to be optimal. Like you said, like way higher than that, like probably in the 20% range, which is going to make this range, I think, is going to be the best like leverage or like, optimal versus percent rostered the place you can go on the card, I think, is these three fighters.
Well, how about Miller's opponent, Bobby Green, 8,600 plus 240 inside the distance. I think he'll be one of, if not the lowest, I think it'll be the lowest owned mid-range fighter because he's Bobby Green and he doesn't really finish. I mean, obviously Jim Miller's old. I mean, he made it to UFC 100, 200, and 300. But Jim Miller surely doesn't really look washed. He seems to be fine. But Bobby Green's fighting style just doesn't really lead to conducive to high scoring. But the field will think that also. I mean, we have Bobby Green at 15%. I would not be shocked if he came in even lower than that. Compared to you look at Bobby Green at 8,600, then Diego Lopez at 8,500. Like this Lopez-Yusev fight, like Lopez is way more likely to win in the first round. But I think Yusuf is more likely to win via decision. I'm not sure how much I like the Lopez-Yusuf fight in general. So what are you doing with these guys? And then we also have Sterling and Cater. We have Rakic and Prochazka. We have Rodriguez and Andrade. How do you make sense of all these fights in the mid-range?
Yeah, Bobby Green is probably one of the fighters I least want to get to. He had like a bad knockout. I think it was against Jalen Turner in his last fight, and it went a little bit too long. Like Bobby Green took a couple of punches there he didn't need to take, and it wasn't that long ago. So that's a big concern. Going up, like Jim Miller's got such a good story. I actually do buy into that narrative a little bit. does Jim Miller get the walk-off win in UFC 300? He retires or something. Gets a big performance check and then calls it a career. I don't know if that's a little bit of a concern for me. Like I'm you know, I don't like to go against the Vegas odds that much. And, you know, it's telling me that Bobby Green's a favorite. I don't know. The Diego Lopez fight and Sadiq Youssef is another fight that I'm not sure I want to be over the field on. Diego Lopez has the distinction of having like the lowest ever first round win score on DraftKings, right? Because he got literally nothing other than the submission win in the first round. So you had no control time, no strikes landed, and he got the 90 points for the first round win, and that was it. You know, like that's all. You know, he's had a higher scoring win since then, but that's a little bit of a concern. He's just not going to score that well. 8,500, he probably doesn't need to score that well, so like it's not like I'm going to, you know, fade him entirely. But then I agree that like that fight is a competitor for the one that I'm going to own the least, because like Sadiq Youssef, yeah, probably gets a decision win, might not be that high scoring, and he's starting to get a little bit pricier in the underdog range at 7,700, where he needs to, he's not in the pricing category of like, well, any kind of win lands him on the winning line. 7,700, he might have to do a little bit more. And then even the one after that, like Sterling, I think, and Calvin Kattar, I probably like that the best out of the three fights, but I probably like it more on the Calvin Kattar underdog side, because he can put up a big striking score. Whereas like I don't like Aljamain Sterling's chances of putting up like a massive score as much at 8,400.
And then we have Rakic Prochazka. I think Jiří is going to be higher owned than Rakic, only because Rakic really doesn't do anything. I mean, he's much more of a low volume striker, and Prochazka is obviously much more exciting, probably much more finishing equity. I mean, both these guys are coming off of like ACL injuries. Yeah. I mean, obviously, if this ends in the first round, I mean, if in the mid range, if it ends in the first round, you're probably doing pretty well. Out of all the fights, I mean, I'm going to mention the chalk. Out of all the fights in the mid range, the fighters in the mid range, like Jessica Andrade is the one that to me stands out the most, but she's also going to, I mean, she'll probably be 28, 30% owned in this range. I think Prochazka ends up being overowned. I wouldn't mind taking a shot on Rakic only because Jiří like doesn't believe in striking defense. So like if someone's going to get a first round knockout, I'll take a shot on an underowned Rakic, but just understand that outside of the first round, he probably doesn't score well enough to make the optimal. And, I side with Sterling with the Kattar, Sterling Kattar matchup only because I just as long as Sterling gets one takedown, I think that kills Kattar's score. The question does Sterling get a takedown? I'm not saying that Sterling even wins the fight. I'm just saying that I'm always going to side typically in DraftKings DFS with the grappler, especially like in the mid where how much does he need to do? It's so much easier to score well with grappling than it is with striking. And the problem is that Kattar, yeah, if he's on the feet for three rounds, I'm with you. But, you know, Mike H. Ributo always says that, you know, it's like, oh, what happens if Kattar wins in the second round after getting completely controlled in the first round? Well, he scores 78 points. I mean, like he just doesn't score enough, but only because you have to think that Sterling has like almost no success wrestling and grappling. And you have to think that that's his game plan. Although he is moving up a weight class. I think maybe the line doesn't, I think the field doesn't think of that when it comes to this, and Kattar's takedown defense is pretty good. But I think it's much more likely that the Sterling, I'll be under on the Sterling Kattar fight more than like the Lopez Youssef fight, only because I think Lopez's fighting style could lead to a scramble that leads to a finish. And I don't necessarily think like Kattar either knocks Sterling out on the feet or this just goes to a decision. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of the mid-range. Truthfully, I'm not really that big of a fan of the mid-range fights in general.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Like, none of these fights, like, scream, you know, jumps off the page to me. And, like, part of that is because, like, we've got 3 5-round fights. Like, why would I not take the extra round? but I'd actually, yeah, my favorite fighter in this range is probably Jessica Andrade. She's got about, you know, she's evenly priced with her opponent, Marina Rodriguez. They're both at 8,100. But now Andrade has a little bit of the win equity, right? She's got a 55% chance, rather, you know, compared to a 45% chance of winning the fight. And, like, Andrade's 3-round decision wins are in, like, the 130s. When, you know, 130s, 140s. She has a couple, you know, years ago in the 140s in terms of DK points. Marina Rodriguez's, you know, decision wins are in, like, the 80s. So I'd much rather take the upside with Andrade. And Andrade has better first-round finish odds, inside the distance odds. So yeah, my favorite fighter in this range is, like, dropping down in price to Andrade at 8,100. Yeah, probably after that, I probably like Yuri Prochazka. Probably like him over Rakic, but I could go either way. Actually, I got a question for you. Did you see the press conference last night? Dana White, the performance, you know, fight of the night, and, you know, performance bonus is 300,000, usually 50,000. I feel like a few years ago when I started watching UFC, that it was like 10,000. And, you know, then it got, that was like ridiculously low when the DraftKings contest is paying out 100,000 to first, and the, you know, fight of the night bonus is 10,000. So they upped it to 50,000, but for this, it's 300,000. I kind of wonder, do we maybe see some more extended brawls in this one, right? Like, I don't know if you want to get, like, a second round submission win if there's 300,000 on the line. And, like, and I'm thinking about, like, the Max Holloway fight and, you know, Justin Gaethje. Are they just going to go to war for 5 rounds and try to take home, like, a fight of the night bonus for 300,000? Do you think that's going to impact the card at all?
It's for all bonuses. So, I mean, you're going to want to finish. I mean, I did the thing. I'm always looking for angles. People have posted this on Twitter. I did a round robin of all 13 fights to not go the distance. I think it's a profitable bet. I mean, but it's a round robin, so it's like I don't need to hit all 13. It's just that it's all the combinations for whatever amount. Because I think that is an incentive. 300,000. I mean, for most of the people on this card, $300,000 is like 10 times their show fee. Yeah. Some of these fighters are probably getting paid $30,000 for their fight on a pay-per-view card. $300,000 means a lot. And I think getting a performance bonus is more tied to highlight knockouts, highlight, you know, maulings and stuff like that, that maybe for some of the, I don't think you need to have an incentive for Gaethje and Holloway I don't think Pereira and Hill need that much. I don't think the title fights and the 5-round fights need an incentive. They're fighting for I think Zhang Weili is perfectly fine just retaining her title, then getting the performance bonus, but all the other, the prelims. Right? Imagine Jim Miller going out and getting $300,000 on his way out the door. Right? Yeah. Bobby Green may give a crap, right? I don't know if Charles Oliveira does. I mean, like, it adds a little bit more incentive to not putting on boring fights.
Right.
And when you don't put on boring fights, it tends to lead to more finishes.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, we're trying to, like, get inside the psychology of Dana White, I think, you know, because we don't know, do the bonuses go for, like, because I think he's done, like, oh, everybody that got a finish on the card, you know, gets a bonus. But I think
it's subjective. He's like a dictator. It's whatever he feels like. That's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And he's kind of up there like the emperor, you know, like, all right, we'll do 300,000, right? And everybody's, you know, going crazy behind him and cheering. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking maybe for, like, an extended war. And I think, like, Jim Miller, he's the particular fight I was thinking about, where, like, let's say he gets a finish or something. Or let's say it's a higher-paced 3-round brawl or something with Bobby Green. like Jim Miller is the fighter. He could see it. Like, all right, we're giving him the bonus, the 300,000 bonus, right? He's like the consummate like UFC veteran. I don't know. Yeah, it's something I haven't thought over a lot. I don't know what direction I'll go in, like in terms of does it affect my DFS play. But I agree, like maybe we do see fighters going more likely, you know, more going for the finish if they're not a typical finisher, or maybe if they're a high paced fighter, maybe they really are trying to go for like a really high paced fight. And I'm trying to think, is there maybe a matchup where the fighters kind of agree, we're going to like try to make this the fight of the night, right? Like we're not going to go for a finish. We're going to like just make this a high paced war. I don't know.
Yeah, but if it's a high-paced war, it's more likely to be a finish. That's kind of the point I'm making. Instead of thinking like that, just go. The variance just goes up because, like, if you have a fight where both fighters are cautious, then it's obviously not going to be the fight of the night. They're not going to get a performance bonus, and it's more likely to go to decision. But if the fighters are like, we want this to be the fight of the night, it's much more likely that someone gets knocked out in the process. I mean, because how else does it become the fight of the night other than chaos?
Yeah.
So chaos equals finishes. So to me, I don't look at it as we're going to make sure to go all 15 minutes. It's like, can they really do that if they're just brawling in a phone booth? No, someone's getting knocked out probably.
Right. But yeah, I'm thinking about it. Like maybe the Diego Lopez and like Sadiq Youssef fight, like maybe Diego Lopez is not so keen to go for like the 0 point first round win, right? You know, like maybe, I don't know, but then that's affecting his style. Maybe that affects the chances of winning the fight. I don't know. Maybe Sadiq Youssef's not sitting there going, well, we'll take this to the, you know, judges' scorecards. I think it could impact the card. I haven't really like made a decision how I think it's going to impact things, but it might affect like how I end up picking some of these fighters.
Well, I mean, if it would be influenced by the betting lines, you'd have to think that the ITD lines move because other people think that. Maybe.
I don't know. Yeah. I, as always with UFC, I like to keep an eye on the lines right up until the last minute, because we've seen some crazy things happen and then the fight's end.
Right. Really, right. Right. James Krause isn't, if James Krause is around, right? It's 10 minutes before lock, right? It's 5:50 Eastern and you're like, well, why did this fighter's money move? Like he went from minus 180 to minus 550 and like, that may be a sign of something.
Right. Yeah. Always a good idea to keep an eye on the lines, you know, especially after weigh-ins. People, you know, make judgments after the weigh-ins, how the fighter looks on the scales. So yeah, it's a good DFS sport to keep an eye on the lines right up to the fight start.
So John, Squirrel Patrol, you'll have your takedowns article. That's behind the paywall. You have to be a premium member for that, but the Ground and Pound podcast is free. I'll mention that again. If you want to hear Liam and Mike break down the fights, I'm assuming I haven't listened to it yet. I will be listening to it today. I'm assuming it's long, right? For UFC, I mean, 300. I can take a look. How long? It's probably almost 2 hours. About an hour and a half. Okay, I see. Okay, 145. Yeah, I see it right there on YouTube. Right, so go check that out. It's free this week. And then, John, you'll have your takedowns article, and we'll also have all the sim results for premium members.
Yeah, I think we're aiming to actually get stuff out like a little bit earlier today, just because it is UFC 300. We got crunch time tomorrow. I think it's on the schedule for 2:00. We always just wake up on Saturday and decide when we're going to do it. But it's currently on the schedule for 2:00. And I think it's going to be three-man booth. Got like an extra special guest coming in. So that'll be worth a listen to. And we'll take a look at any kind of line movement that happens after weigh-ins, as people make their judgments of how the guys, you know, and ladies look on the scales, you know, make sure that all the fights are still on. Takedown's about halfway done. I'm actually like ahead of where I usually am with the takedowns. I think expert survey is like wrapping up as we speak. It should be posted soon if it's not up already. I'm definitely more so than usual looking forward to seeing these like sim results. So I think we've got, you know, some lines and odds we don't usually see in like, situations we don't usually see with, like, you know, a fighter with a 60-something% chance of a first round finish on a card with, you know, 3 5-round fights. Like, can't wait to see how that plays out in the sims in terms of like optimal rates and then comparing that to projected ownership.
Yeah, but it looks like the expert survey is actually out now. So if you're a premium member, check that out. We got Grinders Live later today and crunch time for MLB. There's a lot of, seems to be a lot of wind today. A lot of weather stuff, right, for MLB. So definitely tune into those shows. Hit that thumbs up button on your way out the door. You know how much I like the thummy thumbs for all the free content here. And hit that subscribe button if you're new here. Oh, I like you. I like the way you do it. You do it on the, just the, roll your thumb over. Just looks, it looks weird because people can think that's something else. I mean, people can, right. that can be like, you know, what's the, okay. Maybe we just don't show that on YouTube. But yeah, hit that thumbs up button. Thumbs hit up. The subscribe button. Hit the notification bell. You can hit my notification bell anytime you want. I'll be back on Monday. As always here, 11 o'clock Eastern, Monday through Friday, talking about all things you're thinking about. Daily Fantasy Props and Pick'em on Roto Grinders today.